Welcome one and all to the January 2021 Parkinson's Recovery Support Group gathering. Thanks so much for connecting and being with us today. I have announcements about what's been up at Parkinson's Recovery over the past month. I have three questions that were submitted. We, of course, will check in with the chat room box to see if any of you have questions that you'd like for us to also address or topics you'd like for us to cover. And of course, as is our custom, I'll always connect in with any of you who have called in. If you'd like to be able to have a conversation, that's really all you need to do is to call in to this support group class page, and we'll be able to then have a one-on-one conversation. So what's been up here at Parkinson's Recovery over the past 1 month? One of the big announcements that I want to make sure everybody hears is that I have set into motion a 50% discount off of all Parkinson's Recovery courses for members. What you'll need to do is to see which course or courses you'd like to be able to enroll in. And then on the checkout page, the coupon code for enrollment is the word SUCCESS, S-U-C-C-E-S-S. And that 50% discount will be automatically applied. Some of the courses have ongoing subscriptions. So, for example, you can subscribe for 6 months, and then that's renewed after 6 months. Well, the renewal is also 50% off. And this makes the actual cost of the courses very, very manageable. If you are, for example, subscribing to a longer-term enrollment in a course, the cost every month is somewhere between $6 or $7. So we're talking about just a little bit of money. I must also want to make sure that everyone knows that that's a lot of what I have done over the past month. I've been posting all sorts of new content on the Parkinson's Recovery courses. So that's where I've really devoted and focused a lot of my energy and a lot of my time. And I must say, some of the content is really amazing that has been generated. So I think you'll find a lot of support for your journey down the road to recovery. My second announcement is that, as I think many of you are aware, during the holiday season, I always put out a survey with two questions. The first question asks, are you getting better, about the same, or worse over the past year since the last holiday season? And the second question asks people to list the therapies that are helping them be able to feel better. I've had an opportunity to analyze those results, and those results are posted now on your What's Up page here for members. So if you'll just go on to your membership pages, you'll be able to see the summary of those results. Just by way of a quick summary, which you will also see in what I presented there, is the following. If there's anything that you decide to do to support your journey down the road to recovery, the results are unequivocal. The results indicate exercise. More people than others are reporting that that's what's really helping them, and that's what's making a big difference. And I would also say, if you look at the people who say, for example, prescription medicines or supplements are helping, and there are quite a few who do report that, exercise offers three times as many people some support than does the actual medications, which actually was a surprise to me. The second takeaway is you'll see a listing of the therapies reported to have been helpful, the top 15, and then other therapies that have also been reported. Of course, don't think for a minute that that order of what I have presented is the order for you. You might see any one of the therapies is the one that really is going to be the winner for you personally, since your body is your body and your body has its own needs for support. The other takeaway is that there are so now many options that are available to individuals that are helping and supporting their journey down the road to recovery. Lots of choices, lots of possibilities. I do see that some people will report back, I haven't tried anything, I'm getting worse, or I'm about the same. So I just want to say, if you happen to be one of those individuals, realize that there are a lot of opportunities for being able to reverse the symptoms associated with a diagnosis of Parkinson's disease. So check out the survey results. I think they are very encouraging in the sense that what you also see this report, as has been the case in each report over the past decade, about one-fourth of the respondents who have answered the Parkinson's Recovery Survey report they're better. I say that again, one-fourth say and report that they've been better over the past year. Not the same, not worse. Well, that's an amazing result, particularly because many people hold the belief that this condition is going to mean you're going to always get worse. And then the other really surprising result is about two-thirds of the respondents are either the same or they're better. So two-thirds are not getting worse. And yes, one-third is getting worse. So the good news is that you have lots of reasons to recognize and believe that, boy, there are lots of solutions out there and there are a lot of people who are finding ways to feel better. My next announcement is one that I'm really very excited about. I have a couple of new courses that I'm going to be developing in addition to supporting all the content for the courses I've already created. One of the courses is going to be titled The Future of Medicine. I'm excited about that because I have realized where medicine is headed and how in the very near future we're going to have some technologies that are going to just do remarkable things for people who experience these neurological challenges. So we'll be introducing in that course all sorts of new technologies that I think are that show great promise. Now, when I say the future, these technologies we have very little evidence for, but my intuition tells me that they really are the future of where medicine is headed. As you probably heard me report previously, the future of medicine really resides in administering and receiving frequencies. So the body is basically able to perform when it has the frequencies necessary to be able to come back into balance and centeredness. Well, how do you know what frequencies the body needs? Well, that's partly what we'll be discussing and where really medicine will be headed. And I'd like to be able to take the lead in this is neural net learning. So that's what's going to basically happen. And the medical professionals within 5 or 10 years aren't going to be prescribing many prescription medicines. They're going to be really using the advantages of the new technologies of neural learning and neural net programming to be able to get well. So if you're frustrated at this point with being able to find some options that you feel like are still not solving the problem for you, let me just say the future holds great promise for everyone. And the second course that I'm going to actually be mounting that I'm also excited about is a course that will introduce what I've been doing with investing in something called cryptocurrency. You may have heard about that. You may not have heard about that. It is the wave of the future when it comes to finances globally. And I've realized that a lot of people feel like, oh, it's dead. It's not going to go anywhere. But I'm convinced now that it really is the future. And I've been really helped and supported by a member of my audience who connected in and was able to provide me with all sorts of supportive information about what it meant, how you invest, and all the different potential opportunities. So that's, again, going to be a free course. And for those of you interested in finding other investment opportunities, I really want to encourage you to look out for that course as well. It is an investment. It will go up and down. There's no assurance that you're going to be making all sorts of returns and all sorts of money. But this over the past 8 or so or 9 years has really shown remarkable increases, more so than any investment in any stocks. Will that continue? My prediction is yes. And the reason is that the regulators have now basically accepted cryptocurrency. There's going to be no attempt to have really strong regulations that will prohibit trading. And second of all, there have been now on the platforms the ability to track the money that goes in and out so that taxes will have to be paid by everybody who is investing. So I think the regulators realize that it's here to stay and there's not any way to stop it. So because now it's been accepted as a form of investment, I think what's happened is that the big deal makers out there, the billionaires, the corporations, they're now beginning to invest in a rather heavy way. So the time to get into this is, I think, now. Again, if you're interested in learning about something new, which of course will promote new neural networks, which is a good thing to do in itself, even if you don't create any investment opportunities at all, begin discovering and learning a little bit about what's called cryptocurrency. The other word for this that sometimes some people have heard about is Bitcoin, which was really the first or the initial currency. There are now, something I didn't realize just a month ago, there are now dozens and dozens of cryptocurrencies. So it's become like trading in stocks. So that's not obviously directly related to Parkinson's symptoms, but I have to say, in the member of my audience who was giving me in lessons in this, he basically, I asked him, well, what do you think is your healing for Parkinson's? And he immediately said, it's cryptocurrency. That's my passion, and that's what's really been able to help me feel a whole lot better. So in a way, it may be if you find your call to be able to learn about that, it will do the same for you as it has for him. And now I want to go through. We have three questions. I want to read those and be sure to make some comments on those. First question. Recent clinical studies showed a considerable and stable improvement of motor and non-motor treatments when you were treated with intramuscular high-dose thiamine administered twice a week. Now, that's basically vitamin B1. And so the question here that has been asked is, have any of our members tried this? So if you're listening to this now and if you tried this, please write in the chat room, yes, I've tried it. What has been your result? Has it been positive? Has it been neutral? Has it been negative? Now, as I responded to this particular question, I also want everybody to know that I did interview the developer of this, whose name is Dr. Costantini. He's an Italian, or was an Italian doctor. Sadly, Dr. Costantini died just about a year and a half ago. But he was a big, strong advocate of high-dose B1 therapy. Now, in this particular message, it says that 100 milligrams administered twice a week. Well, on the radio show, Dr. Costantini indicated that when what he was administering was much higher doses than 100 milligram. I mean, he was really doing mega doses for his patients. My final comment about high-dose thiamine therapy is that in talking with people who found that has been helpful, what has been discovered is that the actual dose winds up being somewhat of an unknown. So some people need more, some people need less, and how much you need is actually more of an art form than anything. Even one member of my audience reported that he did beautifully with this therapy, working closely with Dr. Costantini, but when Dr. Costantini died, he said all of a sudden he was not able to do adjustments with his dose that provided the same relief. So I think one of the challenges of this therapy is, well, how much do you really need to take? And finding a medical professional who can provide that kind of support would obviously make a big difference in whether or not you're going to be successful or not. I'll make one other comment about why this therapy is useful. If you are a person who is currently taking prescription medications, certain of these prescription medications, for example, Sinemet, have something called carbidopa. Now, it's not the L-DOPA that creates the vitamin depletions, but rather the carbidopa. So what happens is the carbidopa has to be combined with the L-DOPA, because if you just take the L-DOPA, again, which is the precursor to making dopamine in your body, you're going to have all sorts of side effects. You're going to feel nauseous. You're going to be throwing up. You're going to be dizzy. You're going to be fatigued. So they had to add the carbidopa in order for taking the medicine would be tolerable for people. Well, the problem is that the carbidopa is the one that depletes the B1 and the B6 and the B12 as well. Dr. Costantini focused on B1. He found that supporting megadoses of that for his patients wound up really helping them feel a great deal better and decelerate a reversal of their symptoms. So that's a little bit about thiamine therapy. Again, we've done a whole interview with the founder and the developer of that, so you can learn a lot more about that from the radio show, which you can get by going down onto the, of course, radio show page, and you'll see in the category listings a way to be able to access that interview. The second question, do you have any research concerning the COVID vaccine for those individuals with Parkinson's symptoms? Is it recommended not to take it? Just curious. Well, that's really an interesting question, of course. And is there any evidence of research? No, definitely not. The vaccines have just been developed here within the last 6 weeks. They're just being distributed. When you do an actual research study, you're talking a minimum of 2, if not 3 or 4 or 5 years to be able to actually do the results, set up the study, get the permissions. There's also committees that have to review the study design to ensure that the protection of the individuals is assured in terms of their safety and that they're giving the correct permissions to be able to take the therapy. So, no, there's no research whatsoever for persons. We don't have any evidence really about the effectiveness of these vaccines. They were developed so quickly that typically when you're developing vaccines, you want to have the ability to track whether the vaccine will hold over not just 3 months or 6 months, but rather years ahead. We don't have that evidence. So it's possible that we've got this big effort and initiative, thankfully, to be able to get the vaccines administered. And it may be that, in fact, they will be effective over the long term, but we actually do not know whether that's the case or not. We don't have any evidence at all. So should you take the vaccine or not? Well, but just by asking the question, I have to sort of think, and I was reflecting on, it sounds like you're hesitant to take the vaccine. I would suggest to you, muscle test that question. Ask your body, should I take the vaccine or not? And I think there are two vaccines, so you better be very specific. You ought to be able to ask the question, should I take this vaccine or not, yes or no, and then ask the question about the second vaccine. And maybe one of the two vaccines is better for your body than the other. Both of the answers could be no, or both of the answers could be yes. Now, finally, I think what's important is, all right, so even if you don't muscle test the question, but you have a hesitation to take this step, well, your intuition is telling you maybe that's not the best choice. Keep in mind that there is really a choice that you can make that's the best choice of all, and that's to support and enhance and strengthen your immune system. When you've got an immune system that has vibrancy, then you can be infected by any virus, any bacteria. Your body's going to be able to handle it. So I would say by the question that you've asked here, it sounds like you're really hesitant. I would say, well, be sure you feel confident that this is what your body needs in order to be able to fend off any kind of possible infection. Your body's going to be different from everybody else's. Some people are going to be very much benefited probably by this vaccine. Others maybe not so much so. That's just the way bodies actually work. I would say that be sure that you're confident that this is what your body needs when you take the vaccine. And that's really because if you're taking the vaccine and you're thinking to yourself, oh, I shouldn't do this. I don't think this is right. Well, chances are the vaccine is not going to work very well because, as we know, thoughts are everything. If you're thinking that what you're doing is not going to succeed, it will not succeed. So make sure that you are clear that this is something you need to take. This is action that will help support your body's ability to fend off an infection. And then just go do it. And then thank your body for being able to do what it needs to do to assimilate that vaccine and then protect itself against the possible infection of the virus. Here's a third question. Looking forward to the call. Just wondering if others experience ankle pain. This is new for me. So ankle pain. Now, what I'd like to say as I meditated on this very specific question is that I suspect that the root problem of your ankle pain was initially not really centered with your ankle. That really wasn't the issue at all. The issue probably was a misalignment of your hips. So one of the steps that you could take is to possibly make an appointment with a chiropractor, somebody that you trust, and see if they can't realign your hips. The second step that you can take is it must be something about how you are walking step by step that's creating a little twisting in your ankle. So pay more attention to how the bottom of your foot is interfacing on the pavement or the ground or the floor. You want to be as much as possible putting more weight on the inside of your shoe or your foot rather than the outside. That's where the structure is most likely to be supported. And there are other kind of ways to mindfully pay attention to your posture and how you're actually walking. But I think the best first step that you can take is, my guess is you have a hip alignment challenge. I have a second suggestion for you for a more immediate solution. And the more immediate solution is you obviously have a lot of inflammation in that particular ankle. That's why there's so much pain there. I have a remedy I want to suggest, and it is called Willow Balm, WILLOWBALM. It's a topical painkiller. Why do I recommend this? There are lots of different painkillers out there. I interviewed the developer, the creator, the inventor of Willow Balm. It's now been about 12 years ago on the radio show. It was quite an interesting interview in that I asked the question, well, how did you come up with this formulation? Their answer, I thought, really called out to me. What they said was, well, that her mother had all this awful excruciating pain. She wanted to do something for her mother, so she asked the question, why don't I look and see what all of the natural analgesics are out there? Now, if you look at aspirin, aspirin is actually formulated from willow balm. That's the natural source. So what she did was she found all of these natural ways, these natural anti-inflammatories, and she put them all in this very same formulation. And I've got the names here of all of them on the back of the bottle that I now have had and use that I obtained from her years ago. Jojoba base, menthol, camphor, white willow bark, yearly optical oils, Hilirapskim, I'm not saying that correctly. I know that's a rather expensive herbal essence. Geranium, lavender, and spearmint with citroaxid. So those are the formulations in there. So I just want to say you can get that at any grocery store now. Obviously, when we first interviewed her, I was probably getting the very first products. But it's now widely distributed. It's a well-known product. It's well-accepted. It's natural, no prescription needed. And I would just suggest, why not see if you can find that at your local drugstore and begin applying that topically on your ankle. Whenever I've had any discomfort in any particular localized place of my body and I apply the willow balm, it's amazing how quickly the relief seems to unfold. Now, it doesn't last permanently, so when I apply it, I'll get relief for several hours, if not 3 or 4 hours. And then if a lot of inflammation is present, I may have to apply it over and over and over again. Until finally the inflammation is so much better under control that the healing actually occurs. But willow balm, I think, is a wonderful solution. I know the last time I looked at the drugstore, the cost was very, very acceptable. So I think you'll find the cost is reasonable. And again, I would just provide a testimonial that I think it's a wonderful product that offers good relief from localized pain at a very little expense. So Willow Balm, WILLOWBALM. Now, we've now covered, well, what's up at Parkinson's Recovery? What are we doing? What are the opportunities out there for those of you who are members? I've answered the three questions that were actually submitted here in my email before our program. I don't see anybody who's written here in our chat room field, so we don't have any topics in addition to discuss other than those which we've already covered. And as I look at our listing of callers, we have one person who's called. Looks like it's Bill. Bill, hello, how are you?
Hey, Robin, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well, Bill. And the question is, how have you been doing?
I'm doing okay, hanging in there. I have a kind of general question on that. I think everybody I know who has Parkinson's will agree that you have a lot of variation from one day to the next in your symptoms. You have good days and bad days. And there doesn't seem to be any logic to it that I can determine. And I wonder, you know, it's supposed Parkinson's is theoretically characterized by a lack of dopamine, and there wouldn't be a large variation in dopamine from one day to the next. So there must be some other cause of this.
I think there is, Bill, and one of the primary influencers of that rocky road as people journey down the road to recovery is the effects of detoxing. So if you look at the actual symptoms of detoxing, what you see is that a person will be fatigued. They will have perhaps a headache. Whatever symptoms they are experiencing will be worse. So if a person is taking quite a few supplements, it may be that there's a residue of what has to be eliminated from the part of the supplements the body could use, but then there's also a part of the supplements the body couldn't use. And this is also the case for medications as well. So the body has to get rid of those, and sometimes the ability of the body to get rid of the toxins gets log-jammed. That's when the symptoms are going to get so much worse. So if, for example, a person is taking medicine and maybe they took more medicine than they needed, well, that's going to probably create a residue, a toxic residue that has to be eliminated. The body needs a little time to be able to flush that out, so to speak. So it may be they'll have a day or a day and a half where they're really feeling lousy. The body's working furiously to be able to get rid of that. If there's not enough hydration in the body, then the body's really struggling to get rid of that. If there's an oxygen deprivation in the body, then again, the body's really going to struggle with being able to get rid of that. The other real challenge with why the road is rocky, and as you've described, that's been my experience in interviewing people as well. People believe that they ought to be able to be getting better each and every day, but that's not the way it works. You're better, and all of a sudden you have a bad day. Then you're better, bad day, better. So it's pretty rocky and really frustrating. The other challenge then is you're doing better, and then the third or fourth day, all of a sudden you have a really awful day where symptoms are just in your face. Well, what is the next step of that is a person begins to think, oh, no, I'm never going to get well. I'm never going to get better. And so they begin to contaminate their thinking with thoughts that are not in their best and highest good. And, of course, when you begin to think in that kind of negative time frame, which is very logical and explainable because your symptoms are much worse, the symptoms will then be fed by that negativity. So you're not going to have that kind of support that you need just from your thought form. So another reason why, and it's very, very understandable, as you begin to feel worse, then the thoughts begin to creep in. Oh, no, I'm never going to be able to address the problems that I'm confronting. This is so frustrating. And then you just begin to sort of beat up on yourself, as was, again, happens with everybody. Well, that then is an impediment to be able to turn that around. So one of the things you can always do is to realize, oh, well, my body is just sending out a signal that something needs to change for me today. And oftentimes I think that signal is slow down, reduce the stress and anxiety. So if, in fact, that rocky day all of a sudden presents itself, you might think back on, well, have you been stressed anymore recently? Have there been any incidents in your life that have created a lot of anxiety? Well, okay, that may mean that the other thing you can do is to just recognize, well, that's what's triggered the problem, and to then see what you can do to be able to get relief from that anxiety, to reverse that anxiety. And we all have so many reasons to be anxious these days. Bill, as I recall, you had moved from North Carolina to Los Angeles, and I've been hearing stories of quite a lot of infection in Los Angeles. Is what I hear true?
Yes. We thought we had dodged a bullet here, but it suddenly got over December and early part of January got much, much worse.
So and notably so,
at one point, L.A. County was the worst situation in the entire country.
That's why I was hearing about it then. That's what I thought. Well, that's in itself pretty troubling kind of news. And, of course, it means that you're going to probably want to be more sequestered than you would otherwise and not really move out or do many things. And so that's even in itself something that's going to create some real challenges.
For sure. Yeah, the people, long before COVID came along, people would talk about Parkinson's, isolating them from people without Parkinson's. And COVID on top of that just adds to the problem.
Oh, it really does. It really makes it so much more challenging. On the actual survey for 2020 that I mentioned in the very first part of the presentation, I noticed that although in prior years the percentage was two-thirds of the people who responded were either better or about the same, I noticed that that percentage, instead of 66%, it was down to about 64%, which made good sense to me. I mean, people are more challenged than you would expect, and not as many people are having success with either being the same or getting better.
Yeah, see, even that question to someone with Parkinson's, they might answer it, well, what day?
Yeah. That's exactly right. That's why the best way I knew of to design this is during the holiday season, I would ask, okay, relative to last holiday season, have
right.
you been the same, better or worse? And that's, again, that's pretty crude. The idea is that a person could reflect back and remember, oh, that's what I was doing last holiday season, and this is how I can remember feeling. You know, I was able to be very active or not. But you're exactly right. You could take a survey at any given time, and somebody might be saying worse for that day. But on average, 300 days out of the year, they're better. So
right.
I think that's true for everybody. It's just, and it's so frustrating because you want to be able to start feeling really, really well, and that doesn't seem to be the case. I don't really, Bill, know of anyone I have interviewed who's ever said, no, I've been better every single day. Everybody reports, you know, 3 weeks, good to go, feeling great, and then they'll have a couple of days, and all of a sudden they're just feeling awful until they can, you know, recover back and feel good again. So what you described to me is very familiar.
Yeah, I know it's very common. It's frustrating because it seems so random.
Exactly. It's like just all of a sudden it's in your face. Like, what is this? What's going on?
Right.
And the best way I know to describe it is when you think of, like, the challenge of eliminating all of the bacterial infections or viruses or candida or the mold, whatever it is, although you might have been exposed to, let's say, mold 3 days ago, it may be that all of a sudden the body is really struggling to process that. So there may be a delay in the exposure as well. So you can't really identify, well, what's the real source oftentimes. Although I was thinking, as I was just out loud thinking about reflecting on your topic, I was thinking that maybe you could somehow link some of the symptoms to anxiety, being a more anxious. Is that at all the case for you?
It might be, at least unconscious or subconsciously. That's possible. I mean, I have an immediate reaction to some stressors where certain symptoms will immediately flare, and that's clearly an indicator that something from the outside is impacting the symptoms. But in most cases, it's just, as I say, it seems random.
Yeah, that's really frustrating. And, of course, if you take, for example, another form of toxic exposure, it's the EMFs from our
right.
cell phones, from our computer, from cell towers all over the place. Well, that actually accumulates over time. So it may be that you'll have quite a bit of exposure, even unknown to you, over a period of, let's say, a week, And then the exposure all of a sudden gets to that toxic level, and that's when you have the really debilitating challenge with the symptoms that are so much worse. So some of these exposures may have actually really been building up over time, and it's not even noticeable that that happened. You know, we're always, you know, maybe in front of our computer, we're always using our cell phone. It never occurs to us that that's building up little by little by little every day. And then, for example, it may be that for whatever reason, you're around a cell phone tower for an extended period of time. And all of a sudden, the body just explodes. It just can't process out all of that exposure. And so that's when the symptoms get worse. So one of the reasons why it's so hard to figure out, well, what's the trigger, is that the source sometimes is a little bit tricky.
Yeah, that's interesting. I just, you know, the notion that everything is connected to the amount of dopamine in your brain as the root cause of Parkinson's seems to be called into question by, you know, this variability in symptoms, because your dopamine isn't going up and down and that drastically in your brain.
That's my conclusion as well, Bill. It very much is my conclusion. So I realize that's the primary treatment because it seems to offer relief for, you know, 40 or 50%, which is really quite wonderful. But I don't think dopamine is the primary issue for most people. It looks to me like there are all sorts of other factors that are creating this particular condition. There was a wonderful study that was published just recently that looks at all of the different types of infections that are associated with diagnosis of Parkinson's disease. It was surprising to see the listing of infections that they found were implicated. And they looked at all infections. I mean, we're talking about measles, mumps, really everything. And what was fascinating to me is that really at the top of the list of an infection that was found to be coincident with the symptoms of Parkinson's disease was hepatitis C. And there were other infections listed as well. And the reason I was really struck by that is that my Uncle Gordon gave his body to the Harvard Medical School for an autopsy when he died. Gordon had Parkinson's for about 15 years, and he thought, well, if he can do anything for the world, at least the medical professionals can look into his body and see really what was going on. Why was he suffering with these symptoms of Parkinson's disease? So the Harvard people looked at the body, they did the autopsy, sent it back to my aunt, said, well, we can't really do anything with this. It has nothing to do with Parkinson's. I thought, well, wait a minute. He was taking Parkinson's medicines for 15 years. What do you mean he didn't have Parkinson's disease? The doctor said, no, he had hepatitis C. So I'm convinced that there are lots of different influences, lots of different factors that create these neurological symptoms. And it makes good sense. Those neural networks are very sensitive. They're tender. They're juicy. They're wet. They're charged by electricity. So any alteration in the hydration of our body, in the electrical exposure, like EMFs, quite frankly, is what we're talking about here, you're going to have alterations in the ability of the body to actually function. So these infections, these viruses, these bacteria, we now know all of those also influence the symptoms that are associated with this diagnosis. And, of course, we all know that the heavy metals and the toxins and the pesticides, all that also has a profound impact as well. So there are lots of influences. And the other fascinating result that that really struck me to be an eye-opener was the bioacoustic pioneer, Sherry Edwards, has determined looking at the profiles of voices of the people that she's helped, and that's been hundreds now, she's found that a number of persons that are taking Parkinson's medications have way, way, way too much dopamine in their body. They're overdosed. So the problem is not dopamine. The problem is the body's ability to process dopamine. That's another question altogether. So to think it's just the supply of dopamine in the body is the issue is not really very simplistic. True for a very small number of individuals or percentage of people, but for most people, it's not so much the dopamine. It's either the ability of the body to process dopamine, or it's not dopamine at all, it's something else. And of course, you want to ask, well, how come dopamine makes such a big difference to so many people? Well, it's the kind of stimulus that we get when those of us who like other stimulus, like drinking coffee, okay, that generates those kind of good feeling dopamine sensors in the body. Or other people prefer taking alcohol, or other people, unfortunately, prefer to take some other kind of street drugs, some of which now, of course, are legal. And all that's going to produce dopamine. And yes, that makes you feel better. So one of the reasons when people have dopamine enhancers is one of the reasons they feel better is that naturally that's what's going to happen when you have more dopamine in your body. But I step back and I have to say, Bill, of all the many years I've spent in meditating and researching and looking at all the factors that influence this, yes, dopamine can be an issue, but it's actually not a primary issue. I would say it's very much a tertiary issue.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. Because, I mean, in my case, taking carbidopa, levodopa doesn't really help me that much. And one of the ironies here is what medical doctors will do to determine for sure whether a patient has Parkinson's is to prescribe them carbidopa, levodopa, and see if they get better.
That's but right.
That actually is not a very good test, because they could have Parkinson's and just not respond very well to that drug.
Exactly. That's so true. I have so many people who report that they're taking the medicine, but they don't really think it's helping that much, which is really very sad. And then, of course, there are other people who are, it's just a miracle drug. I mean, they feel so much better, at least for several years, if not more. So everybody's body seems to be so differently. Well, so you are taking still that medicine, sounds like?
I take some. I resisted it for the longest time, and then I finally had to give in to it.
Well, so in following up on the earlier presentation I gave in the question about vitamin B1 and the depletion effects of carbidopa, are you taking some vitamin supplements?
Yes, I take every supplement in the world.
Oh, good. And those vitamin Bs are really important because they offset the depletions that are caused by the carbidopa.
Yeah, I mean, when you're not taking the medication and people are trying to convince you to take it, they'll say, oh, this will make you more functional. That's a word that they often use as you become more debilitated from the disease. And, of course, that's a very enticing prospect. But it's not like you take the medication and you're back to normal or even that much better. It just kind of blunts the worst aspect of it.
Right. Well, it sounds like you feel like it's still a good idea to continue taking the medicine.
I'm not convinced, really. I've made every possible adjustment to it, take a little more, take a little less. And honestly, I can't, because there isn't a direct cause and effect, just like with what we were talking about previously.
Yeah.
It's very hard to ascertain what the right thing to do is.
Well, Bill, have you ever gotten into muscle testing?
No, I've never done that. I know I've heard you talk about it in the past, though.
Yeah, I have to say I've known about muscle testing for 20, 25 years. And I would dabble with it off and on in the early stages of my knowledge of muscle testing. But more recently, I have really begun to rely on muscle testing in a big time way because I just get such good results. And you might just in terms of investigating ways to solve this challenge of, well, how much medication, when medication to take, you might start muscle testing that and ask your body, do I need this medication, yes or no? And if I do need it, how much should I take and when should I take it? You know, ask those all very specific questions. You might be able to then rely on your body's innate wisdom to be able to know what you actually need. And so you might be able to make some really good decisions by using that approach.
That's a good suggestion.
I have a class that I just mounted up on the What Really Matters course that I really love doing. And I thought, listen, I need to let people know more about exactly what I'm doing in terms of muscle testing. And so what I demonstrated was the method that I've been using here now pretty extensively for the last several years. And the method, so you don't have to rely on somebody else to muscle test. All you really do is you take your thumb and your index finger, or any finger will do really, and then you just very lightly rub your thumb against your other finger. And if it's smooth, if the surface is smooth, your body is saying yes. And if the surface is a little bit sticky, your body is saying no. It's such a cool way to muscle test. It's like, good God, I can't believe this. And I've just been doing that, and I can then do one or two circles with my thumb against one of the other fingers and immediately know whether the answer is yes or no. It takes 2 seconds at the most. So I can ask any question and get an immediate answer and then go on to the next question. Or, you know, maybe I don't need to have any other questions asked. So muscle testing, there are dozens and dozens of ways to muscle test. All you're really doing is asking your body a question. And if your body responds with strength, in this case smoothness, the answer is yes. And when your body responds with weakness, in this case with the stickiness, then your body is saying no. And I want to say, in defense of this method, a lot of people think, well, this couldn't really work. It's really unbelievable the number of healthcare professionals that use this as a diagnostic tool and as a tool to make recommendations on therapies. I think almost all naturopaths are trained to do muscle testing, and so they use it as a routine basis. Some medical doctors use it. Almost all chiropractors use this. Acupuncturists use this. It's just incredible how many healthcare professionals actually do this. So I've been advocating this for people to use just on their own. You don't have to go to a healthcare professional to get that answer. You can do it yourself.
Okay. I'll definitely look into that. That sounds promising.
Yeah, check that out. That means, because you've got some really tough decisions to make about, well, do I need to continue this? Should I talk to my doctor about reducing it? Or, you know, what do you need to do? It sounds like, doesn't seem like it's helping that much. So is it just the case that you're taking a lot of it and your body has to continually get rid of it, which is creating some challenges in itself, or is it really doing some good? And so asking your body can really make a big difference.
Yeah, because if you complain to a neurologist about it not working, their answer to that is always give you more, never give you less. Mm-hmm.
No, that's right, and that's the option that you get when you go to a neurologist. You have to remember that's what they do. That's their specialty.
Right.
Their specialty is medicine. That's really all they do, and it's all they're legally allowed to do. So if you go to your neurologist and say, well, I'm interested in natural methods, well, I'm sorry, but they don't do that. They're not trained to do that. They're legally liable if they make any recommendation about anything other than prescription medicines. So that's what you get when you go to the neurologist is medicines. And hopefully if it's very clear the medicines are dosage is too high, they'll work with you and, you know, reduce the dosage. But I guess they found that oftentimes if they just increase the dosage, people do get a little bit better. As you well know, Bill, the downside, of course, is as people increase the medicine, feel better, oops, need more medicine, increase the medicine, feel a little better for a while, then you get to a point where you can't take any more medicine. So
right.
Then the doctors are at a loss. They're not going to prescribe a higher dose than the body can tolerate. So then the next options wind up being something like, deep brain stimulation surgery or focused ultrasound or something else other than the
right.
actual medicines. But I think
right.
I'm advocating the very beginning of the class. I do strongly believe, and my intuition tells me I'm right about this, that in the very near future, we're going to find all sorts of wonderful options for addressing the issues that you just described. So I think what's going to happen is we'll have systems that will be able to monitor your frequencies that you emit in your body, which we all emit frequencies. And then through neural program, through neural learning, these programs can then say, oh, I see Bill needs these frequencies that are missing. So they'll deliver those frequencies to you and then bring your body back into balance. So I think the answers are clearly going to be frequencies delivered through sound or even light. And if we just hold in there, we can tinker with the medicines. But I think, boy, the medical professionals are going to be really excited to see what's coming down the pike. I think doctors will be practicing the frequency medicine here in the very near future, much more so than prescribing medicines.
Well, I look forward to that day. I hope I get to see it.
Well, I do too. It's like I think it's finally here, and the technology is finally here too. So it's really now just being developed. The really interesting result, if you look at what people report is helping them, is a lot of people are reporting that the photobiomodulation therapies are helping. A lot of people. So that's frequency. That's frequency. And when I began to see how many people were reporting, that was something that was really making a big difference. I got one of the light therapy devices. It's called X Plus from the Violite people, the wonderful people that I've interviewed on the show now several times. I've been using that for myself almost every day. It takes 20 minutes. And I have to say, my goodness, my ability to remember names and events is so much better now than it was before I started using the therapy. Even when I was younger, I had problems struggling with remembering certain names or events, for that matter. But the more I use that therapy, the more I see, well, this is the real deal. So light therapy is just a way to deliver frequencies. So I really do think that we can all be hopeful that there are new inventions, new therapies out there that are going to make a big difference in people's ability to be able to really heal. And when you look at the issue of Alzheimer's, the big influence of the light therapy, especially as it applied to the brain, is it clears out all of those protein coagulations, which are what is causing memory challenges. So people who are having some memory challenges, boy, I would say if there's anything that you do, begin to get the photobiomodulation therapy, and I think you'll really be pleased with the result.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you, Robert. You've given me a lot to think about.
You're welcome. It's always such a pleasure. And thank you so much for connecting into our events every day. It's just so wonderful. When I begin to start the support group gathering, I always think to myself, I hope Bill is there. We'll have a chance to talk. So thanks for connecting in. Many blessings and stay healthy.
Thank you, Robert.
You're welcome. And let me now check the chat room. I don't see, I don't see anybody who's written any other topics to discuss there in the chat room. So it looks like we've pretty much concluded all the different topics that we needed to discuss. What's been happening here at Parkinson's Recovery, what I've been doing, all my hopeful anticipations of the future of medicine. And so if you have any other follow-ups that you need, particularly if you're listening to the recording of our event today, email me, call me. I'm here for you. Remember, the whole passion is to be able to support the success of more and more people who are finding ways to heal their neurological challenges. So let me hear from you. I might have some suggestions that will really be able to make a big difference. So I'm here for you. Let me know. Email, call me, and I'm happy to respond. I know everybody can't connect into our live events here because you've got other things you need to be done. But if you're listening again to the recording, let me hear any topics you want to have discussed. I'm happy to do that now or any time whatsoever. Email is, as you well know, robert@parkinsonsrecovery.com. And finally, I want to make the pitch. Please begin listening more and more to the meditations that I mount up every single week on the Parkinson's Recovery member websites. And all of the other services that I provide, as you well know, I spend a lot of time every week in supporting and developing and maintaining all of that content and all that material. It's there to provide you with a positive stimulus for being able to support your journey down the road to recovery. So please connect in to the member websites every single day. You'll find interesting ways to laugh out loud. You'll find mind challenges that promote neural network development. You'll find mind work that help to be able to allow the right and left sides of the body to communicate with each other. You'll find all the updates from me on the What's Up with Robert website. You'll find wonderful quotes. Whenever I mount those, whenever I find those, I think that's a wonderful quote. So it takes, 15 seconds to read the quote and to be inspired by other people who have wonderful perspectives on natural healing options and possibilities. So let me know how I can help. I'm here for you one way or another. As you know, this is your host and your sponsor, Robert Rogers, founder of Parkinson's Recovery in 2004. So we've been around here for quite a while. Thanks so much for being here, and we'll be sure to mount up the recording on the website here by the end of the day. And again, please begin to start to listen to the meditations that I've recorded for you to listen to every week. The long meditation, about 30 minutes, the shorter meditations, 5 minutes or 4 minutes every single weekday. So connect in every day and get ready to be inspired. So thanks so much for being here and supporting the work that we do here at Parkinson's Recovery. And that's what's happening here on the shores of the Puget Sound, where all the women are smart, all the men are handsome, and all of the children are profoundly loved. Thank you so much for being a member of Parkinson's Recovery.